In this part of the class, we are going to discuss about one specific I/O device, which is the hard disk drive. Okay, and just like as you can see here, this is like a hard disk drive, and the disk that we have here internally, this is called a platter. Okay, and hard disks can have multiple platters. And each platter has two surfaces, like the top surface and the bottom surface. And data can be stored in both these surfaces, both on the top and on the bottom. And this part that we have right in the middle, this is called the spindle. The spindle is the axis of rotation for the hard disk. And the thing that we have here is called the disk arm. This is the disk arm of this particular hard disk, and the tip of this disk arm, which is right here, okay, the tip of this disk arm is called the disk head. Okay, this is called the disk head. And whenever this disk, so let's assume we want to read some data from here, then this disk arm moves like this, okay, and then when the data comes below the disk head, then that is the place where we are actually reading the data. Okay, this is how this works. And this particular operation of this disk arm moving like sideways, like from the outer to the inner of this particular disk, this is called seeking. Okay, and this, the other operation is like the rotation, where the disk is rotating. We'll be looking at it in more detail now. Okay. And this particular part, this is called the disk arm controller, which actually controls how this, where this disk arm should be placed. Okay. And if you should read or write from that particular disk. So the first thing that we're going to see is very similar. Like, we have two parts in each device, right? The interface and the internals. We're going to see the interface that this particular hard disk provides. The interface that the hard disk provides is just in terms of sectors. It just says, we assume that the entire hard disk is a collection of sectors, and this, the interface that this particular device provides to the operating system, is like a group of n sectors, 0 to n minus 1. And one sector here, okay, is 512 bytes of data. In a hard disk, one sector is exactly equal to 512 bytes of data. Then we're just going to look at the disk geometry. Here, let's assume this is the spindle again. Spindle of the disk. And in this particular disk, this whole thing is the platter. As we saw, this is the spindle, and then each disk has like multiple tracks, okay? So in this case, let's just assume this particular disk has two tracks, okay? This particular disk has two tracks, and the sectors are placed on these tracks. So in a way, like, something like this. So in this disk, there are a total of 18 sectors which are placed in two tracks. This whole thing is a track. And usually there are like millions of tracks in a particular disk. Here we are just assuming, to start with, we're just assuming we just have like two tracks. And the disk's speed is usually measured in terms of rotations per minute. And the typical speeds that we can see is like 7,200 or something like 15,000 rotations per minute. These many rotations happen in a single minute. So the next thing that we're going to see is what are the different times, okay? So let's assume if we have the disk head here. Okay. This is the disk arm, and this particular thing is the disk head. So not here. So let's assume the disk head is here because there are no tracks there. Okay, let's assume the disk head is right here at this point. Or for simple. And if you want to read, let's assume if you want to read the sector 8, if you want to read the sector 8, then in this particular disk, we are going to make, first we have to see currently, since it is, okay, there are only two tracks, okay, and let's assume we are on this particular track and 8 is here, okay, the sector 8 is currently here. And if you want to read this particular sector, first you have to do a seek from this inner track to the outer track, and then wait until, let's assume the disk is rotating in this way. Rotation happens in this way. And so we have to wait for this particular sector to come under this disk head. So the two operations that we just need to do here, first is a seek, and then we have to do a rotate. And finally, there will be like the data transfer that is happening on this particular sector. And you can actually assume these sectors if there is just like, let's say, one particular track. Let's assume this is just a single track. Usually, sector is like some region in this particular track. This whole thing is like a sector. This disk is divided into like multiple sectors like this. Okay, so the data, when it is read, it is going to be read from, let's assume, from this point till this point. The entire 512 bytes is going to be read, and that has some data transfer time. So there is some seek time that is involved, there is some rotational time that is involved, and there is also some data transfer time that is involved. So the I/O time that we need for like doing some particular I/O time for performing a read or write, like the I/O, is the time it takes to seek. Seeking happens from tracks to tracks, so time it takes to seek. Then the time it takes for rotation of the platter, so that particular sector comes below the disk head, and then the time it takes for the data transfer. And if you would like to calculate the, usually the disks are compared with respect to their rate of I/O. So the rate of I/O operation that happens on a disk is, you just take the entire size that you're trying to transfer, size of the data that you're trying to transfer, and we divide it by the time for that particular, the total time that it takes for the particular transfer. This time that we calculate here, we just divide it by the total size of the transfer to get the rate of the I/O on that particular disk. Okay. The next thing that we are going to see is we're going to just compare two different disks from the real world and see the difference in those disks with respect to sequential workloads and random workloads. We are going to see like what that means. So the two disks that we are going to see are Cheetah 10K, 0.5. So both these disks are from Seagate, okay? And this disk has a capacity. The Cheetah has a capacity of 300 GB, and the Barracuda has a capacity of 1 TB, okay? And this has, Cheetah has a rotations per minute of 15,000, and the Barracuda has rotations per minute of 7,200. Average seek time for this particular disk is 4 milliseconds, and for this is 9 milliseconds. And the maximum transfer rate, the bandwidth this can produce is like 125 megabits per second. And here it's like 105 megabytes per second, and here it's 105 megabytes per second. Now, there are like a lot more parameters, but these are the things that we need at this time. So here we are going to compare these two disks based on two types of workloads. One type of workload is a sequential workload, and the other workload is a random workload. Okay. Assume we are going to do a sequential read, and we are going to do a random read. So if the disk has, again, just assume two tracks, and if we have like 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like different sectors like this, if a particular sequence of disk reads that are happening in this case, if it is, let's say, 15, 0, 3, 9, and 6, then this is, if you are reading these different sectors, okay, these are sectors read. If you want to read sectors, these sectors, then this is called a random read. If we want to like read sectors, let's say 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, this is going to be a sequential read. Okay. So for this example, we are going to assume we are going to read, okay, in the random workload. We are going to just read small amounts of data, like 4 KB, from random locations on the disk. Okay, we are just going to read 4 KB of data. You may assume like everywhere that we go. So here we are just talking about sectors here, but you can assume that in this case, if you want to like read 4 KB of data at a time, how many sectors we would read at one time? So the number of sectors in 4 KB is nothing but, so a sector is of just size 512 bytes. So we are going to have eight sectors. This 4 KB is nothing but 8 sectors. But once you read like this whole thing, this 4 KB, usually is the block size. We'll be learning that after some time, but usually you can, even now you can think that 4 KB is just the block size. This is the size with which the operating system communicates with the disk. And so here, the minimum amount of data that can be read or returned to a disk from the operating system is 4 KB. Okay? But for 4 KB of particular block, okay, for writing a 4 KB block, the disk in turn performs like write to 8 sectors, Okay, and these 8 sectors, if you think about it, the disk only guarantees, like in the sense, the disk only guarantees us like a write to a particular sector will be atomic. In the sense, even if you write a whole block of 4 KB, if power is lost in the middle, we could have returned this block partially. We could have just returned like 4 sectors and other 4 sectors may be unreturned. That is possible because the disk only provides guarantee of saying like either I write a sector or I don't write. Okay, but from the operating system thinks that okay, it has returned this 4 KB of data in the disk, and so since that whole data may not be returned completely, this may cause some inconsistencies, which we'll look at later, like how to handle those things. But at this time, you can just assume we are actually reading just at this level of, like we are just reading 4 KB of data from random locations on the disk. Let's just start with this random workload, okay? Let's just start with this random workload for both these disks. First, let's just start with the cheetah. So in the cheetah, if you're going to compute what is the time does it take for this random workload, then you're going to compute something like time for IO, time for seeking plus time for the data transfer, and let's start with the seek, okay? So the seek is already given in our specifications that we have here. Just wrote here, the seek is already here, okay? The average seek time is already given here, which is like 4 milliseconds. So we can directly use this 4 milliseconds to be the average seek time. And then for a rotation, time for a rotation, we are going to calculate the time for a rotation now. So how can we calculate this? Based on the rotations per minute, we have given, the data that is given here is like we have rotations per minute of 15,000, okay? So there are, the RPM for this particular disk is 15,000. And so all this means is there are like 15,000 rotations that happens in 1 minute or 60 seconds. Okay. So then if you want to calculate time for one rotation, just say 60 by 15,000. This will be in seconds. So you can do something like 15. You can take this as the milliseconds, so 15, 4. So this is going to be 4 milliseconds. So what this means is the time that it takes for a complete rotation. By that, here again we mean, if let's assume if we are here and the time it takes for 8 to come back to this same point again, okay? This, it takes like 4 milliseconds. But since we are assuming like random workload, we are assuming a random workload, these we need not do, okay, we need not do complete rotations for accessing each of these random workloads. Instead, we just assume them to be like the average rotation time, okay? So we assume, since we really don't know where these different sectors may be on the disk, so we are going to assume it to be like the average rotation. So the average rotation is just half of this. Assume it to be like just 2 milliseconds, okay? So half, like rotating half the disk kind of, okay? Just assuming it to be 2 milliseconds. And now the third thing, the data transfer. Time for the transfer. Okay, how do we compute this? From the data that we are given here, about from the disk manufacturers, we see that the maximum transfer rate is 125 megabytes per second, okay? Using that, we are going to see how much time does it take to transfer 4 KB of data, because we are assuming in each random read, we are going to read 4 kilobytes of data. all we are going to do here is for the max for one reading 125 megabytes, we need 1 second. Okay, so for reading 4 kilobytes, how much time do we need? We need 4 KB divided by 125 MB seconds, kind of. Okay, and if you compute this, this would be approximately, I have it here in my notes, this would be approximately like 30 or 32 more specifically, but you can assume it to be like 30 microseconds. So this value comes in the order of 30 microseconds. So now we just got all these three things, okay? So we are going to compute this for cheetah. We are going to compute the time for IO. And this time for IO is nothing but time for the seek, which is 4 milliseconds, plus time for the rotation or the rotational delay. This particular thing is called the, this is the seek time, this is the rotational delay. So the rotational delay is 2 milliseconds, and the transfer time is 30 microseconds. And so this is going to be 6.03 milliseconds. If you add this and convert this to milliseconds, it's going to be 6.03 milliseconds, or approximately 6 milliseconds. Okay. Now using this, we can also compute the rate for I/O in this particular rate of the I/O for this particular thing. Here, the size of data is 4 KB. And the total time it takes is 6 milliseconds. If you compute this, this is going to be 0.66 megabytes per second. So the rate for doing random I/O, the random I/O rate, random I/O read rate in this particular disk called Cheetah is 0.66 megabytes per second. Now, based on this, may take like the next 2 to 3 minutes to see if you can compute this random I/O rate for Barracuda using these parameters in a similar way. Just try computing this, and then we will be like seeing the difference between the two. Yeah. Can't happen. So usually, yeah, usually it happens in parallel. So for example, the question is, can seek and rotation happen at the same time? Usually when we are seeking, rotation will also be happening. But here, for the purposes of like calculating the rate, we usually will not be able to like figure out that particular overlap. So we just assume them to be like sequential, in the sense, if we assume the seek happens separately and then the rotation happens. But in practice, while we are seeking, the disk is also continuously rotating. Exactly. So seek. Exactly. So here the seek again is just like seeking from a track to a different track. So in this case, if this is our thing, and if we are currently, let's say, at sector 13, okay, and if we want to read the sector 7, then we are going to seek once to the outer track. And then we are going to do, if this disk is rotating like this, okay, then we are going to wait at that outer track till that 7 comes below the disk head. Does it make sense? So usually whenever we want to like read this particular data, here the seek happens first. I mean, but at that time, while the seek is happening, the disk is also going to be rotating. But the seek happens first, and then we will be waiting below that particular place, okay, for that particular sector to come below the disk. Pardon? Yeah, in this case, we are just measuring the worst case scenario, yeah. So this, you may assume this to be like the worst case scenario, where even after that particular seek, you need to like do at least a half rotation. So, okay, again, the confusion here is like the question that I was answering there was the worst case scenario with respect to the overlap of seek and rotation. So in this calculations that we're doing, we're assuming seek happens separately.
Right, so the worst case scenario would be that it's seeked and then what we want to read just past it. So now it's going to go all the way around before we read it. So this is an average.
That's correct. Yeah.
So like this is an approximation of the reads. It's not like a particular read.
Yeah, I was wrong. So again, this is just an average case scenario, but we don't take into account that particular overlap. But that is how it happens. Yeah. Again, if you had calculated this, you may have found that the time for seeking, okay, in Barracuda, I think comes to like 9 milliseconds is already given there in the manufacturing details. And then we have, like, if you calculate the time for rotation, I think it comes to like 4 milliseconds. You can just cross-check. And then the time for transfer comes to like 38 microseconds. And just as like 13.038 milliseconds, and this is approximately 13 milliseconds. And so if you go and calculate the rate of I/O here for Barracuda, it's going to be for 4 kb. Again, we are just doing with the random workload. This is 4 kb by 13 milliseconds, which is 0.31 megabytes per second. You can double check the calculations again, but yeah, if you do the same thing with Barracuda, this is the thing that we're getting, okay? So some things to note here are the rate, the time that it takes for the rotation and the seek is actually so high, okay? It's so high when compared to the time it takes for the data transfer, and usually the data transfer time is like very minimal. And so when we are going to like look at how can we do, when we have like a bunch of sectors to read from the disk, how can the operating system help the disk in doing these reads in a better way, an efficient way, by scheduling these reads in a most efficient way, okay? And so during those times, you'll be trying to reduce the seek time and the rotation time in those disks. And data transfer time is just going to be the same in the sense it is a fixed value for transferring each sector, and it is like very minimal when compared to the rotation time and the transfer times. And one more thing that we want to like observe here is along with that, so we can make like a table. We just found the random workloads rates here. So rates for the random workloads are 66 megabytes per second. And for this, it is 31 megabytes per second. And first, before we also want to see what is the rate for the sequential workload. So for first, let's just calculate that. So for the sequential workload, the workload assumption is we are reading 100 MB of data, and all it needs to read for this data is just a single seek and a single rotation. You can just assume that we only need like one seek to that particular place and just like one rotation, because after that, since the data is sequential, you may assume that the 100 MB that we're reading is in the same track. Like, if this is the data that we're reading from here, let's assume this whole thing. This whole thing contributes 100 MB. You just start here, do a seek and a rotation to this particular place, and just go on reading it continuously. So you just like do this, like after the initial seek and the initial rotation, you don't need any seek and any more rotation to actually read the entire sequential 100 MB of data. And so for this, it becomes like relatively easy to calculate the rate of I/O. So here, since we know that this whole read is happening sequentially, and we also know the maximum rate at which the disk can perform, so it is like 125, the rate for the I/O, that this disk, the max rate is 125 megabytes per second. And so to read something sequentially, you need like 125 megabytes. And usually the maximum I/O rate that the manufacturers advertise is the rate at which a sequential read can happen. Okay? And so here we are just saying for 100 MB of data, for 125 MB, we need like 1 second. So for 100 MB, we need 100 by 125 seconds, which is nothing but 800 millisecond. Okay. So this is the time. Okay, this is the time that it takes. The rate that it takes is already here. We need not even find out this rate separately. We are just trying to find out what is the time that it takes for the sequential read of 100 MB of data. And similarly, you can calculate the thing for Barracuda. So the time that it takes, the total, this is the TIO. Okay. Barracuda, the rate is the RIO, maximum rate is 105 megabytes per second. And so for 105 megabytes, you need 1 second to complete. So here you're trying to find for 100 megabytes. You need 100 by 105, which is approximately 950 milliseconds. This is the time that it takes for this whole I/O of 100 MB to happen in these two disks. So now, since we already know the maximum transfer, okay, maximum data transfer rate in both these disks, 125 and 105, these are exactly what comes for a sequential workload. For a Cheetah, it's 125, and for Barracuda, it's just like 105. Now, with these values, the important takeaway point is we can see that the rate for doing a random I/O is very low when compared to the rate that we can perform a sequential I/O. So sequential I/O operations are much faster on disks in general when compared to random I/O operations. And the reason for this is just the disk geometry. So when we are talking about sequential I/O operations, all we are doing is just like going to a particular location with a seek and a rotation. And from there, we are just like the disk will be spinning at the maximum speed. And the disk head will just start reading continuously all the sectors that are coming in a sequential way. But in a random I/O, for each and every data transfer that we are doing, we are actually seeking and performing, we'll be performing some rotations in the disk, which causes a lot of time. So if you do the ratio between these two things, okay, compare the ratio between these two things, this is like nearly 200 times larger. So it takes like nearly it's 200x faster. Sequentially, it's 200x faster on Cheetah. And similarly, if you compare these two things, it's like nearly 300x faster. So the important thing again here is, even when we are going to go and look at how can we schedule things as much as possible, if we can write or read from a disk in a sequential way, then we are going to get the maximum rate from the disk when compared to performing some I/O, like random I/O operations. And we'll be using this idea throughout this part, persistence, while looking at like how different systems are built. For example, different file systems. There is a file system called log structured file system, which we'll be looking at later. But in that file system, this idea is used so much that any operation that happens on a disk will only be a sequential read or a sequential write. So with this, we'll just like take a look at some videos. So any questions about what are we trying to see till now? No, can you please repeat? I don't get it. I don't understand the question.
So in the max transfer time,
yeah.
When you were doing your calculation, you didn't really account for like seek time or rotation time, because you only have to do it once. So it's just like you just do it once and then it's just like
Oh yeah, I think I just like did not show it here, but yeah, since we assumed that, we can just add those time for one seek and one rotation to that particular thing. But that really does not affect the maximum transfer rate, because when a sequential read happens, that time is like insignificant when compared to the amount of data that we are reading. Pardon? Pardon? Yeah, in the exam, you need not worry about like for sequential, you need not worry about the seek and the rotation times. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how long the sequential is. If it's sequential, we just ignore the seek rotation.
Yeah, we will be like more specific about those things. Okay. Don't worry. I have a short video like from YouTube. Don't think the sound is needed, but yeah. Can see like how copy paste works. That's it. Yeah, I just thought this was interesting to see the different actions that happens, especially for copy-paste. And one more video. No, this will be interesting, yeah. How many of you knew this before? Yeah, okay. So don't ever pour water on your hard disk. So before we take a break, the last thing that I would like to discuss is on hard disks, okay? On hard disks, think about it. These are different tracks that we have. Thanks. Sorry. So as we can see here, since the innermost tracks have very little space, the number of sectors that are in the innermost tracks will be different, okay? It will be less than the number of tracks that we will have in the outermost sectors. So for example, let's assume if these two sectors, okay? Sorry, if these two tracks, let's assume the number of these tracks is T1, T2, T3, T4, and T5. If these two tracks have, just for purposes here, we can just assume that there are 100 sectors per track. And if these three tracks, if all these three tracks, if they have only, let's assume, 90 sectors per track and stuff like that, okay? Just assuming these three things are very close, okay? And so these two things will be called a zone, okay? All these two tracks will be part of, let's say, zone one. All the tracks in a single zone will have the same number of sectors. And the other three tracks are part of another zone, let's say zone two. This way, the tracks are actually grouped into zones, and all the tracks within a single zone will have the number of sectors per track to be equal. Okay, this is one thing. We will see in some simulations in the last part of the class that how this particular organization into zones affects the bandwidth that we can achieve from the outer tracks versus the bandwidth that we can achieve in the inner tracks. Okay. Okay, I think we can take a break now. It's 7:42, so we'll be back by 7:52. And in the last part of the class, we're just going to see about a topic called disk scheduling.